So how has your day been?
Eh.
Eh?
Yeah, I woke up really late.
Yeah?
Because I couldn't sleep.
Are you enjoying the cooler weather here in the state of Minnesota?
I haven't left my house in like 5 days.
Yeah, that's the answer I was thinking was going to come out of your mouth. So, are you ready to talk about a new mama, a new mommy?
Yeah, I liked this story.
Good.
It filled me with dread, unlike the past stories we've read.
Well, speaking of filling you with dread, I've got some info about this story that'll fill you with even more dread.
Yeah?
But I'll get to that in a second. Hey, everyone, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. You're supposed to do that after we say that.
Is it? No, because now that's where the themes music comes. You would know that if you ever listened to the show.
Why should I listen to the show? I live it.
The children were always called Blue Eyes and the Turkey, and they came by the names in this manner. The elder one was like her dear father, who was far away at sea, and when the mother looked up she would often say, "Child, you have taken the pattern of your father's eyes," for the father had the bluest of blue eyes, and so gradually his little girl came to be called after them. The younger one had once, while she was still almost a baby, cried bitterly because a turkey that lived near to the cottage and sometimes wandered into the forest suddenly vanished in the middle of winter. And to console her, she had been called by its name. Now the mother and Blue Eyes and the turkey and the baby all lived in a lonely cottage on the edge of the forest.
You just heard the opening paragraph of The New Mother. Do you know who The New Mother is by?
Lucy Clifford.
By Lucy Clifford. And reading that was a friend of mine, Shannon Camp, who has been on my other podcasts. And Shannon has her own show called Little Women, a modern audio podcast, which she is the writer of and one of the stars of. And it's a great audio drama. And I have a guest appearance on a few episodes of it as the old grandpa. And I'm thinking about getting just some people to do readings of the future stories as well.
Do I get to help pick this the next time?
Yeah, if you have any friends in mind, anyone you know who you think could
have three friends. All of them illiterate.
Well, then why did you ask? The New Mother by Lucy Clifford. So you said something. Is it?
Yeah.
Or is it an anyhow story?
Nope.
Nope. You dropped some knowledge about Lucy Clifford in the last episode, right at the very end.
I did?
Yeah, you were like, Lucy Clifford, that's not what she goes by.
Oh, right.
Yeah, do you know what her pen name was?
Her pen name was, oh, Mrs. W.K. Clifford.
Her story is, she's a little bit like Mary Shelley, in that she was married to a super famous guy, and then he died really young. And then she just went on and just kept being like a famous writer.
Yeah.
And made a name for herself. Because he like invented his own form of algebra.
That sounds like a really boring guy.
Yeah, but like it's like revolutionized mathematics and like helped people like figure out complex problems they hadn't been able to figure out before. He seemed like a pretty interesting guy. They were like super liberal, forward thinkers. Then he died young of like, his death is like super mysterious because like, they were on a vacation. The village they were staying at where he died, like eventually like everything burned down in a massive fire. So all records of his death are gone. Like people have like investigated his death, like in like modern era, like trying to figure out like exactly what happened to this guy. I think he just died of tuberculosis though.
No, someone killed him because he was a really boring guy who invented algebra.
I don't think he was boring. I think he was really fascinating.
I'm just saying this to get a rise out of you at this point.
His discoveries and his philosophies like led to like modern computing.
I'm sure he was a great guy.
And
died of tuberculosis.
I believe he was the first like person to like seriously put forward the idea that space-time is curved in on itself before Albert Einstein ever came around.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
So like he was a pretty interesting guy. And he had a kicking beard. He had one of them like modern beards that people go down to like the middle of your stomach but like are trimmed and like shaped very carefully. He looks like, if he was alive today looking exactly like he looks, he could just walk down the street and people would be like, "Oh, there goes William." Like there's Will. There's Big Willie. Except now he'd be called like Papa or something.
Nope.
Clifford the Big Red Papa. Anyway, Lucy Clifford. She went on and wrote a bunch of novels and short stories, and a bunch. She wrote 100 short stories. And one of her most famous collections is called The Anyhow Stories, Moral and Otherwise.
It is an anyhow story. The debate is between whether it's a moral and other or otherwise story.
Yeah. Is it a moral or an otherwise? So
it's a moral story.
Do you think so? Do you think it's a moral story? How come do you think it's a moral story?
Because it has a lesson at the end.
It does have a lesson at the end. Is it a good lesson, though?
Yes.
It seems horrifically unbalanced.
Nope.
So after he died, Lucy Clifford was left to raise their two kids alone as a single mother. And apparently this had a lot really, really messed her up. It's so stressful. And she had to earn all the money and become a famous writer in the process. So many of her stories are very dark, grim stories about childhood.
Kids suck.
More like life sucks, especially if you're a kid.
No. Kids suck.
Well, you know who really sucks? Blue Eyes and Turkey.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying it's a moral tale.
But it's a weird moral tale. And it is a moral tale that has been retold many, many times.
By many people. Many men.
By many men. Yeah, so we were doing we were looking up this story, and it has been rewritten a lot by men, which is very unfortunate considering it's a very much a story about motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Very much like Frankenstein, a woman whose famous story has been told and retold time and again by a bunch of men, when it's very much a story written by a woman about motherhood, basically. But what's the most famous rewriting of this story?
The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark one.
Speaking of stories we haven't covered yet.
Jesus Christ, that's the first movie we're watching once we get back to being able to watch movies together.
So in 1984, journalist and writer Alvin Schwartz, in the second installment of the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series, More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, retold this story as The Drum.
Say something about this.
Yeah.
I did not like this version of the story.
The Alvin Schwartz version of the story?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah, weird, isn't it? Even though it's essentially the same kind basic story.
It lacks so much. It doesn't give me a sense of dread. It just seems dumb. It seems dumb. It's dumb is what it is.
The Drum, which he attributes to an anonymous folktale called The Pear Drum. And he has notes in the back of his story. He's this is based on a story from England called The Pear Drum that's come to America by word of mouth. So he never even knew that this was a story by an author, by Lucy Clifford. And Alvin Schwartz did his homework. He was no slouch. He was a journalist. He tried to get stuff as that's how out of people's minds, this story had become a story and not a written story, like Beauty and the Beast. People forget that it had an initial author.
Like The Little Mermaid.
Like The Little Mermaid, yeah. It's a fairy tale or a folk tale that was actually created by someone.
Mm-hmm.
So you said that Schwartz simplified this story a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot. And also just changing of it to I don't want to use the word.
The derogatory term for
the derogatory term that is consistently used by.
Yes.
What is the proper term?
The Romani.
Yeah, the Romani. Yes,
it uses a derogatory slur for the Romani in reference to one of the main characters in the story throughout, which is funny because Lucy Clifford's version, which was written in the 1800s and you think would be far worse in that regard, never mentions that word. Never refers to this character as anything other than the little girl or the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even the signifiers don't lead you to think she might be suggesting that because the story is so weird. And one thing that Alvin Schwartz's version of it and all the adaptations I've seen, this is based on an old folktale versions. They don't ever really zero in on how weird the story is.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there's that creeping sense of dread and uncanniness, starting with the description of the little girl and going out. And it is right here that I have a major revelation for you.
For me?
For you. I'm handing a revelation to you. And I did not hand you this revelation earlier because I did not know this until about an hour ago when I picked up my own copy of Anyhow Stories, Moral and Otherwise, which I got for free. You can get for free on Google Books. It's just you go to Google Books, you search for Anyhow Stories, Moral and Otherwise. It's free, and it's not just an ebook. It's actually a facsimile of the first edition. The version that we have, and oh, by the way, this is The Dark Descent.
Yeah.
We're doing stories by David G. Hartwell from his series, The Dark Descent. This is from the first volume, Color of Evil. The version that appears in The Dark Descent, edited by David G. Hartwell, where he introduces it as a story by Lucy Clifford, tells where it's from. The version that you read, at least I assume, your version actually could be not this. I do not know. The version I have, at least, is a shortened version of the original short story.
How long is the original one?
It's I don't know word-wise or length-wise, because it's like a, you know, in a very different format. But like every single paragraph has stuff edited out. Like for for time reasons, not, or for space reasons, not. Well, I will amend that. An entire, so I'll ask you. In your version of the story, in the version in The Dark Descent, does it have a character who is a man with two dancing dogs?
No.
Okay. So for some reason, The Dark Descent has this truncated version of the new mother. It's the same story, and all the words are from the original version. It's just missing, I'd say, like a quarter of the text.
Why?
Just from internal edits. And you actually lose some pretty creepy descriptions of things. Okay, I'm getting way ahead of myself. What is this story about?
It's about two sisters who live with their mother and their younger sibling, the baby, and they go every day to walk to the village.
Yeah.
To see if there's a letter for them from their father who's away at sea.
Yes.
And they're very happy, and they're very good children.
Yep, very good.
Their mother is very loving. Everyone loves each other.
Yeah, it's a pretty ideal family.
Except for the fact that the father is away at sea.
Right.
And yeah, that's what it's about. It's pretty much, it's what it's about. It's not like what happens in the story, but right. It's what it's about.
That's your setup. You have this, yeah. It's sort of your opposite of a fairy tale. Like everyone's pretty content. This is not a story of, they're not doing great for themselves, but they're not starving. They have a pretty nice setup, actually.
Yeah.
They got a clock. They got tin on the walls.
A fire.
They have milk and a baby. They're all happy.
And a mom.
Very nice mom. Yeah. So the one day they get sent to go pick up a letter from the post office at the local village. And it's the day after a festival.
Yes.
So everyone in the village is kind of in a good mood. And the girls are kind of upset they missed the festival the day before. And on the way back from the village, what happens?
They see a distressed 15-year-old.
Yeah. Can you find in your copy when they first leave the village and just read to the end of that paragraph?
Okay. They had left the village and walked some way. And then they noticed, resting against a pile of stones by the wayside, a strange, wild-looking girl who seemed very unhappy. So they thought they would ask her if they could do anything to help her, for they were kind children and sorry indeed for anyone in distress.
So in the original version, that is an entire paragraph by itself. And here is what it says. They had left the village and walked some way. And then, just before they reached the bridge, they noticed, resting against a pile of stones by the wayside, a strange dark figure. At first, they thought it was someone asleep. Then they thought it was a poor woman, ill and hungry. And then they saw it was a strange, wild-looking girl who seemed very unhappy. And they felt sure that something was the matter. So they went and looked at her and thought they would ask her if they could do anything to help her, for they were kind children and sorry indeed for anyone in distress. So first she looks like someone who's asleep, then it looks like a poor woman, an ill woman, and then they're like, wait, no, it's just this teenage girl. A lot of that kind of description is cut from The Dark Descent.
Yeah.
That really, like you said, the Dark Descent version had a really creepy feeling. The original text is even weirder. Like, there's just a lot of that going on. Like, the kids look at something and they're not sure for a while what it is until it resolves itself.
That's what kids do, though.
That's what kids do, but you know what else also does that that we haven't talked about in a long time?
Fairies.
That lead to some of the scariest interactions that we've discussed on this show.
Fairies.
The notion that fairy is like probably the most horrific kingdom you could possibly interact with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like The Dark Descent cuts a lot of the stuff out that suggests even more so. Because in the version that you read, it's still in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really in there in the original version. Like, oh, they are dealing with an otherworldly creature.
I mean, what else? What other type of creature would convince two little girls to...
And she says some stuff that was cut, and I'll get to it when we get to it, that even leads you to believe that this girl they run into has no clue, like, how humans are supposed to behave.
Well, yeah, obviously.
So, yeah, so they run into this girl, and what does she have?
She has a shawl.
Uh-huh.
Something hidden in her shawl.
Yep. And they think it's a baby.
Then she sits on it.
Yeah.
Well, first she lies.
What did she say first?
I live in the village.
And they're like,
what are you sitting on?
And what did she say?
A pear drum. A what?
And they're like, what? A what now? And it's all one word. Pear drum.
Yep.
And what is a pear drum, according to her?
A curious instrument.
Yeah.
Most people in good society have one. No, they don't.
That's true. It's like a lute or a guitar. It has three strings, but only two pegs to mm-hmm. tune them. And it says here, I think this part is cut from yours. It says, the third string was never tuned at all, and thus added to the singular effect produced by the village girl's music.
Sounds like something a hippie musician would say. Hipster musician, sorry.
You don't, hippie, hipster. You don't play it by strumming it. You play it by turning a handle hidden on the mm-hmm. side. But what's really weird about this thing?
It has box.
Yeah, and what's in the box?
Two dancing people.
We think.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's like, they're like, what's in the little box? And then she's like, oh, there's a little man in there and a little woman. And he'll tip his hat to you and she'll dance. And also they're like, did that thing cost a lot of money? And she's like, yeah, I'm really rich.
And they're like, no, you're not.
Yeah, you don't look rich.
She's like, oh, yep. Okay.
And she keeps saying that it's lucky to look as shabby as she does. And you're like, what is wrong with you? So she says that these two little people live in the pear drum box and they dance whenever she wants them to, but they're not allowed to see it. Why aren't they allowed to see it?
Because they're not naughty children.
And so this is where you suddenly get to like, wait, what? What? And she's like, yeah, like only naughty people are allowed to see them. So you have to be naughty. And they're like, they don't even know how to be naughty.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we'll try. And she's like, yeah, you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah. You want to know why they can't do it? Because there's no man and little woman in the box. This is something that adults and teenagers do to little children a lot.
Right. And Blue Eyes is like, I don't know how to be naughty. And Turkey's like, I think I can be naughty. And then Blue Eyes starts crying. And she's like, no, you can't be naughty without me. And they're so upset that they can't be naughty. They're cried all the way home. They're crying at home. The mother is distressed that they're crying so much. She's like, what is wrong?
Oh, my children. Oh, my dear, dear children. What is the matter?
Yeah. And they're like, we can't be naughty. We want to be naughty.
And she's like, what the hell?
Yeah. Why do you want to be naughty? And they're like, we want to be naughty. And she's like, you can't be naughty because that would mean you don't love me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when things start getting weird.
Because if one loves well, one's love is stronger than all bad feelings in one and conquers them.
And this is a test. Whether love mm-hmm. be real or false, unkindness and wickedness have no power over it. And they say, we don't know what you mean. And we love you, but we want to be naughty. Because they really want to see inside that pear drum.
Honestly, don't understand. I mean, as you know, I was a relatively curious child.
Yeah.
Relatively. I was a very curious child. I wouldn't shut up.
Uh-huh.
About anything. I just think that if I approached a woman and they were like, you gotta be a bad kid in order to see in this box to see the man and the woman dancing, I'd be like, nope.
No, that's good.
I'm good. And I believed in fairies when I was young, too.
That is very true. You get the feeling that these two little kids are very sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of being a bad child is so foreign to them that it becomes almost like a crusade to do something not good. Like, almost like the kindness of the home has been detrimental to their development.
Yep.
Like if they had been allowed to be a little naughty or had been even given the opportunity to be naughty, maybe they wouldn't be in this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the mother wouldn't be in this mess, because what does she say will happen if they make her unhappy?
She'll leave and the new mother will come.
Who is the new mother?
A new mother with a glass eye and a wooden tail. Why does she have a wooden tail? No one knows.
Yep, she has glass eyes and a wooden tail, and they're like, wait, what? We've never heard of this before. So they go back to the next day, they go back to they find the village girl, and they're like, can we see the little man, the little woman? And she's like, no. And they're like, but if we're naughty, our mother's going to go away and send the new mother with glass eyes and a wooden tail. And the little girl's all, that's what they all say. New mothers with glass eyes and wooden tails are much too expensive to make.
Mm-hmm.
So then what does she tell the kids they have to do?
Yeah, that they have to be naughty.
She sings a song in my version that is not, I know is not in your version.
Yeah.
They're like, well, can we see the man and the woman tomorrow? And she's like, questions asked today are always best answered tomorrow.
Yeah, that's in mine.
And then she goes, goodbye. And she starts walking off. And as she walks off, she sings, oh, sweet and fair is the ladybird, and so's the bumblebee. But I myself have long preferred the gentle chimpanzee. The gentle chimpanzee. The gentle chim... And then she stops and she's like, oh, I beg your pardon. It's very rude to sing without leave before company. I won't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids go, oh, no, do go on. And she says, I'm going. And they're like, no, we may go on with your singing. And it's this weird little exchange between them. She's singing this bizarre little song. And that's when she leaves and they start crying again. So what does she tell them to do?
Just be, she doesn't say anything.
Oh, she doesn't give them instructions this time.
No.
No. So they go home and they smash their mugs on the floor and they throw their bread and butter on the floor. And they won't do what their mother says for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
They stamp their feet with rage. And she says, go up to your bed until you're good. And they're like, we won't be good. And they go up to their bed. And the mother gets very angry. And they go up to their bed, but they sing songs all night. They don't go to sleep.
They said, yes, she says, do you remember what I told you I should do if you were very, very naughty? Yes, we know, but it isn't true, they cried. There is no mother with a wooden tail and glass eyes. And if there were, we should just stick pins in her and send her away. But there is none.
Yeah.
And then she became really angry.
Yeah. So I don't know where the mother gets the idea for the new mother, but it has consequences. So the next morning they get up without asking. They run out of the house and they go find the girl who's with the pear drum.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, all right, we were really bad last night. We were really naughty. We smashed our mugs. We threw our bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
We did everything we could. And we got sent to bed without... You know, we got sent to bed. And she's like, look, if you're really naughty, you wouldn't have gone to bed when you were told to.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, did you throw cold water on the fire? Did you break the clock? Did you pull all the tins down from the walls and throw them on the floor? And they're like, no. She's like, yeah, I didn't think so. Goodbye. And then she starts leaving again.
She just, it says, in my version, it says she vanished.
So many people mistake a little noise and foolishness for real naughtiness. But as I remarked before, it wants skill to do the thing properly. Well, good day. And then she vanishes.
Yeah, it says, so many people mistake a little noise and foolishness for real naughtiness. And before they could say another word, she had vanished.
And then they're like, okay, we got to be really bad.
This vanishing girl.
Yeah.
We got to listen to what she says.
So what do they do the next time?
All of that.
They throw water on the fire. They pull down the baking dish and the cake tin and the fish slice and the lid of the saucepan they had never seen and bang them on the floor. They broke the clock and danced on the butter. They turned everything upside down. And then they sat still. They wondered if they were naughty enough. And that's when the mother says, if you're not good tomorrow, I have to go away and the new mother will come.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're very sad because they don't like to see their mother upset, but they really want to see what's inside that box.
Dude, how dumb are these children?
They really want to see what's inside that box.
Well, then they're dumb.
There's a little man and a woman.
No, there's not.
And they'll tip their hat to them and do a funny dance.
No.
So they go to find the little girl again. And when they come upon her, she's looking in the box.
Mm-hmm.
But when she hears them coming, she like slams it shut.
Yeah.
And they're all like, we did it. We were super bad. And she says, you seem really quite excited. You should be calm. Calmness gathers in and hides things like a big cloak or like my shawl does here, for instance. And she looks down at the ragged covering that hid the pear drum. And they're like, okay.
It just says in Maya that you should be calm.
Yeah. So she says these mysterious little like things to them. And they're like, well, we did everything you told us. And if we have to, and my mother says she'll go away and send another mother if we're not good. And the little girl says, "The things that people say are most singular and amusing. There is an endless variety in language." And they're like, "What?" Can we see the little man and the woman? And she's like, "Where'd your mother say she would go? And when did your mother say she would go?" And they're like, "We don't want her to go." And she says, "People go and people come. First they go and then they come. Perhaps she will go before she comes. She couldn't come before she goes. You had better go back and be good. You're not really clever enough to be anything else. And the little woman's secret is very important. She never tells it for make-believe naughtiness." So now she adds this thing. She adds this secret that the little woman has, who will tell. She'll tell them that they have to be really naughty.
Yeah.
And that's when she's like, "Also, you didn't throw the looking glass out of the window or stand the baby on its head."
Because that would kill it.
What does it mean to stand a baby on its head?
To take a baby, turn it upside down, put it on its head, and then let go.
I guess? Is that standing a baby on its head? I thought I just meant turning a baby upside down.
No.
Okay. Well, in any case, she's like, "Look, I have to leave. I'm going back home after all this. So I'm going to come by your cottage tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. And maybe I'll be playing the pear drum when I come by."
Make-believe naughtiness is only spoiled goodness.
Yeah, I love that phrase.
Yeah.
She's like, "So if you break the looking glass and do the things that I ask," and they're like, "We'll do it, we'll do it." And she's like, "I don't think you will." And then she says a line that I really love. She says, "Good day," and she starts leaving. And then she turns back and she goes, "11 o'clock, I shall be quite punctual. I am very particular about my engagements." And I'm like, very.
Yeah.
It's so wild. Like, just the weird rules, but the strange logic she sets up throughout this whole story.
Fairy.
It's like, you're dealing with a fairy creature. You're dealing with a creature whose rules and laws make sense only to her. So they go home and they're terrible. Mm-hmm. Blue Eyes and Turkey, they throw the looking glass out the window where it destroys. The mother gets upset and she's like, "See ya."
She puts on her best gown and her new sunbonnet and dressed the baby in all its Sunday clothes. And then she came down and stood before Blue Eyes and Turkey, and just as she did. So the turkey threw the looking glass out of the window and it fell with a loud crash upon the ground.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah. So she starts leaving and they're like, "Mother, we..." And then, or the clock strikes 10:30, even though it's broken. And that's a big thing. So I don't know if it goes into this much in the truncated version, but in the full length version, it talks a lot about the clock, how their clock at home is broken. It always was broken and it rings, it chimes at random times, but they love it anyway because it's beautiful. But now that they've broken it, it suddenly becomes very accurate. Mm-hmm. And it chimes at 10:30 and they start panicking. They're like, "Look, we're going to be good. We'll be good at 11:30. Just come back at 11:30. We'll be good. We will indeed. We just have to be naughty until 11 o'clock. And it says, "The mother only picked up the little bundle in which she had tied up with her cotton apron and a pair of old shoes and went slowly out at the door. It seemed as if the children were spellbound and they could not follow her." So they can't follow their mother outside for some reason. They stand at the doorway and call to her, and she will not come back. And then what happens at 11 o'clock?
There was a sound.
A sound.
"Then the children felt their hearts ache with sorrow, and they cried bitterly, and yet they could not believe that she had gone. And the broken clock struck 11, and suddenly there was a sound, a quick clanging, jangling sound, with a strange discordant note at intervals. They rushed to the open window, and there they saw the village girl dancing along and playing as she did so."
So this says, essentially that, it's a little bit longer, but it says, "They rushed to the open window, and there they saw the village girl coming towards them from the fields, dancing along and playing as she did so. Behind her, walking slowly, and yet ever keeping the same distance from her, was the man with the dogs whom they had seen asleep by the blue lion on the first day, on the day they first saw the girl with the pear drum. He was playing on a flute that had a strange, shrill sound. They could hear it plainly above the jangling of the pear drum. After the man followed the two dogs, slowly waltzing around and around on their hind legs."
Nope.
And they had seen this man. So when they go to the village originally, you get a lot more description of the village, like the people who were just kind of there from the festival the day before. And one of them is a man who's just kind of asleep by one of the buildings, and there's these two dogs that are just kind of lounging around, and they're like, "Oh, those must be dancing dogs from like the traveling circus or whatever." Mm-hmm. And the dogs are kind of weird. And the girls just notice them. And this is the same man. And they're like, oh, those must be waltzing dogs. So now the pear drum girl is leaving, and this man is following her with these dancing dogs, which is a very creepy image.
You know, it's funny, because in stories, people don't notice things unless there's something to be noticed.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't notice two dogs just lounging around.
Right.
That's not something that's noticeable. What you do notice is when you look out of the corner of your eye and you see something, you're like, that's not right. And then you look straight at it and you're like, oh, it's just two dogs. That's normal.
Yeah.
There's something so slightly wrong with these dogs.
Yeah.
And they can't explain it.
The whole story smacks of the uncanny and this, mm-hmm. in like it's, and the otherworldly, and like this strange girl with the pear drum whose very presence seems to have infected this whole area. Is the man one of the fairy people? Is he being led away by her? Is he like one of her like captives? We don't know. Like, all we know is that he's with her now and he's got these two dancing dogs. And for some reason, that is the creepiest image in the whole story, is these waltzing dogs.
Because there's something just ever so slightly wrong with them.
Yeah.
It's like, those definitely aren't dogs, and maybe they never were.
So they're like, can you please show us the thing now? Mm-hmm. And she's all, you didn't do it right. You threw the water on the wrong side of the fire. You didn't throw everything quite in the middle of the room, and you didn't stand the baby on its head. And they're like, but we did what you said. And they're like, and she's all, whatever. She just keeps dancing and playing. The man follows her. The two dogs waltz around and around, their tails motionless, their legs straight, their collars clear and white and stiff, and they just keep walking off.
But our mother is gone, the children cried. Our dear mother, will she ever come back? No.
And the little girl says to them as she's going out of sight, she yells out, the girl sings out, the little man and woman are far away. See, their box is empty. And for the first time, the children saw the lid of the box was raised and hanging back, and that no little man and woman were in it.
Oh, that's not in mine.
I'm going to my own land, the girl sang, to the land where I was born. And that's when they say our mother is gone.
Yeah, the empty box isn't in there.
Oh, really? See, that to me is like, oh, man.
No, sang the girl, she'll never come back. She took a boat upon the river. She is sailing to the sea. She will meet your father once again, and they will go sailing on.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, no. And then she's like, your new mother's coming. She's already on her way. But she only walks slowly, for her tail is rather long and her spectacles are left behind. But she's coming. She's coming. 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 And then she just dances away. There's still story left.
Yep.
Because that new mother has to show up. And does she?
Yep.
This is another part of the story that is missing big chunks. They clean the house. They're like, if we clean the house, if we get everything nice, maybe our mother will come back. Mm-hmm. But there's this interesting stuff that they leave out, which is, it says they bolted the door, they shut the window and fastened it. They're like, we'll close the door and the new mother will think nobody's here if she comes. It says, and then in spite of all they had said, they felt naughty again and longed after the little man and woman they had never seen, far more than after the mother who had loved them all their lives. And then they did not really believe that their own mother would not come back, or that any new mother would take her place. Then later on, Turkey says, I wish we had heard the little woman's secret. I wouldn't have cared then. Mm-hmm. So you still have these like reverberations of this like whatever that had kind of bewitched them, mm-hmm. like hanging over their head. So yada, yada, yada. The new mother does show up, and it's terrifying.
It's funny though, because the new mother doesn't really like scream malevolent.
Nope. Well, she does have glass eyes.
Okay.
And she does have a wooden tail.
Yeah.
And she does use the tail to smash open the front door within one blow.
Well, I mean, if you were locked out of your house, there seemed to be no way to get in.
I'm locked out of my house, and I do have this door-smashing tail.
Yeah, what would you do?
And she smashes open the front door. The girls run away. They run out into the woods, and they're still there.
It's like the two children from Mama.
Kind of. Yeah. 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 Very much so. They're outside the house looking in at this new mother who's mm-hmm. in the cottage. The windows are closed. The doors are shut. And no one knows what the inside looks like. And now and then, when the darkness has fallen and the night is still, hand in hand, Blue Eyes and the turkey creep up near to the home in which they once were so happy, and with beating hearts they watch and listen. Sometimes a blinding flash comes through the window and they know it is the light from the new mother's glass eyes, or they hear a strange muffled noise and they know it is the sound of her wooden tail as she drags it across the floor. And that's how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask you again, is this a moral tale?
Yeah.
I disagree. Why do you think it's a moral tale?
Has a lesson at the end.
I think it's a scary, a weird tale disguised as a moral tale.
I think it's both.
Well, I think that's a fair assessment. Like, I think she uses the trappings of a lesson story to tell an uncanny story. Like,
yeah. But I also think that it is a lesson story.
Do you think a child is meant to read this and actually learn a lesson?
I would, if I was a child reading this.
What would you learn?
Don't trust strangers.
I thought you were going to say, don't be naughty.
No, I feel like the opposite is learned in this story. Because this story is so much about these two perfect kids who lose themselves in their... Like, they. It seemed like they needed an excuse to be bad children.
Yeah.
Like, I was not a perfect child. I did a lot of stuff that I never got caught for. And because of that, I think that I learned a lot of lessons and don't have the urge to be incredibly naughty all the time.
So, one interpretation. So, I read a bunch of, like, people. So, this story, of course, has been truncated and shortened and shortened and shortened. And like we said, the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark version is not scary.
Nope.
It's more, it to me, it is just a moral story.
Yeah.
Like, it just reads like a lesson. Like, the same stuff happens, but it's very short. There's no subtlety or nuance.
There's a lot of slurs.
There's a lot of slurs. And it's not, it's more, yeah, you get feeling it. You're supposed to be spooked more just because it's about, like, better be good or the new mother will come.
Yeah, and I feel like that's not what this story is about.
Yeah. There's
I
even...
don't think
No, go
it's
ahead.
I don't think it's a traditional moral tale. Mm-hmm. I'll rephrase what I was saying. I don't think it's a moral story. I think you're right in saying that it is a weird story disguised as a moral story.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that just because it's a fake moral story doesn't mean you can't learn something from it.
That's true. No, I agree with that. I think that's a totally valid takeaway from this. When it gets shortened, and it does get shortened a lot and retold a lot, you'll hear it referred to as the drum in Scary Stories Telling or More Scary Stories Telling. It's called, just called the drum. A lot of times it's just called the pear drum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just presented as an old English story. Yeah, sometimes the kids are called Turkey and Blue Eyes. Sometimes they're called Turkey and I think like Red Skirt or something.
They're called Blue Eyes and Red Skirt because in one of the versions of the story, in the end of the story, they get taken into the box and two young boys come up to see what's in the box and they see a dancing figurine of a girl with blue eyes and a girl with red skirts.
Yeah, in some versions of the story, it's just a girl holding a box
mm-hmm.
with magic, like two dolls inside or whatever.
A music box.
And she promises to give them the box if mm-hmm. they're naughty, which I think kind of like takes a lot out of it.
Yeah.
In one version of the story I read, they go home and they kill the kittens. They kill their mother's kittens.
And then the mother murdered them because that's what I would do if two children killed my pets.
Like, some of the versions get very dark in that direction. But it all sort of serves the purpose of, like, these kids get worse and worse and then the wicked new mother comes.
Mm-hmm.
Some versions actually cut out the new mother altogether and just have it be about the mother leaves. And then the girls are, like, lost forever. But regardless, you lose, I think, that sense of the uncanny and that sense of the weird that Lucy mm-hmm. Clifford infused this story with.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you're supposed to just be scared of this new mother. I think you're supposed to be scared of the whole dire situation.
I don't even think the new mother is supposed to necessarily be all that scary. I don't know. It just she didn't seem like an evil presence. She didn't give that vibe off to me.
I don't think you're supposed to be comfortable with her.
Maybe it's just because I because of my personal history
uh-huh.
with parental figures. I'm not exactly frightened by mother figures.
Yeah.
It's just not something that's ever really been like a, like, okay, there's another mom here. That's great.
Well, this story has been adapted into movies as well, or like short films. It was adapted into a short film in 2013. I'm trying to find. It was adapted into a movie called The Old Woman in the Woods, mm-hmm. in which the girl is now an old, like a crone. Mm-hmm. I really wish I could see it because I want to see how, because it's adapted by a woman filmmaker, mm-hmm. as opposed to a man who we've been encountering a bunch of adaptations. Caroline Coots is the adapter, and it's a 30-minute short film that she made and showed at a few film festivals, and it's not out there anywhere.
I think that there is one. I wouldn't say adaptation because it's not an adaptation. It's its own standalone thing, but it definitely, even the author said it was definitely inspired by the story, Coraline.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one really does still contain the very uncanny valley feel of the story.
Yeah, so Coraline, Neil Gaiman said that, he didn't say that he was inspired by The New Mother. He said he was inspired by the story The Pear Drum,
mm-hmm.
which is, I believe, that like even he wasn't aware of the origins of the story when he thought of Coraline. There's an interview I found that he mentions that. And yeah, so Coraline has a new mother with black eyes,
mm-hmm.
who's far more malevolent than this one.
Yes.
Who shows up. I would say that Coraline isn't quite as naughty as the girls in the story.
No, that's why I said it wasn't an adaptation. It was more of a inspired by.
Very much inspired by. But you can, if you know that and then you read it, you're like, you can definitely see the inspiration mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, and it also delves very much into the fairy-esque.
Yeah, and making the deals and the bargains.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that at the end of the day, I thoroughly enjoy this story.
Yeah.
This is the first one in the book that I find, I mean, the ash tree had a distressing ending, but this is the first one that I feel really did a good job of just creating a sense of dread.
I'm sorry. I said we did two stories before this one. I meant three. I forgot about the Evening Primrose.
Evening Primrose. Again, not a very scary story.
What?
Not a very scary story.
You are cutting out like crazy.
I'm cutting out?
Yeah.
Like crazy?
Well, bye. We're talking.
We're talking. We're actually talking. We had some kind of adventures with losing part of the thing. The recording stopped and then everything went to heck and now we're back and we're going to end this episode.
Yeah. It's a shame that my wonderfully formatted half curse word is not going to make it into the episode. It's a shame we lost that. The funniest part of the episode.
It is a shame we lost your half formatted curse word. So the I don't even remember what we're talking about. The new mother, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. Read the original story.
Yes, like I said, you can find the original short story on Google Books. I don't know where else. It came up on Google Books. The new mother is in Anyhow Stories, Moral and Otherwise. And I'm going to be very, very careful looking at these short stories going forward. I hate to think that we're reading like truncated versions of some of these stories.
I think that the ones, because at the beginning of my book, there's general acknowledgments to reprint, like for permission to reprint. I think that the ones that are acknowledged in here should be good.
Okay.
And I mean, Call of Cthulhu might be, but I have the original copy of that anyways, so
right.
It doesn't matter.
It's just the new mother isn't in here.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
It might be because The New Mother is like kind of a lost story.
Or it's, you know, I know it's out of copyright, but still that is weird.
It might be because they didn't get permission to reprint the exact.
Or he thought he grabbed the original version and he accidentally grabbed a short version.
Yeah.
That's so wild. Well, you can get Anyhow Stories, Moral and Otherwise, and there's some other good stuff in there, by the way. There's some just weird stuff to read your kids. Pretty dark, dark sounding stuff. So, Willow.
Yes.
What is the next story in The Dark Descent?
Well, There's a long, long trail a winding.
Yes, but what is it called?
That.
That what?
That one. My favorite story, that one.
There's a long, long trail a winding. You know who it's by?
Russell Kirk.
Russell Kirk. Our first story by a articulate conservative.
Great. And then our next one is by a blaring racist. I'm by so a blaring excited. Racist.
But for some reason, I'm more like reticent about reading the story by the Christian moralist than I am about reading the story by the weird racist from New England. So yes, it's a long.
The racist that was so racist that other racists were like, "Hey, maybe you should tone down the racism."
The racist who has, however, recently had his seat as king of the weird fiction racists. I think he's been unseated from that position, but we'll get into that when we get into his story, which I'm going to predict might actually be more than one episode long, but because it's a long story.
Yeah, it's a long ass story. Although but this one's pretty long too.
This one's pretty long too, which is, you know, suitable considering it's a long, long trail of winding by Mr. Russell Kirk, but we will talk about that next week. I don't know anything about Russell Kirk really, so yeah, we'll get to it when we get
except
to
for
it.
That he's a
Christian conservative moralist.
Great. I'm so excited.
That doesn't mean it's gonna be bad though.
No. I just don't want to know anything else about this man.
People find all kinds of weird stuff scary, so it could still be scary, but...
I'm not worried about the story. The story is in here, which means it has to be at least a bit good. Yeah. I don't want to know anything else about this man.
Well, then I will do all the research on that man.
Yeah, but I still have to hear about him.
Yeah, but you won't hear about it till later. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for tuning in to It's Del Toro Time, Dark Descent, Stories of David G. Hartwell, collected for Dark Descent, Color of Evil.
Why was this story in the Color of Evil?
This story?
Yeah.
I would say that girl represented at least one of the colors of evil.
Yeah. No, I was saying that is in like a throw out question kind of way.
Oh, I see.
Because we've answered that. We've asked that question for all the other stories. So it just felt weird to not do it for this one, too.
Well, I think we just answered it.
There's blue eyes and there's an evil kid.
And a turkey.
Goodbye.
No, wait. Thank you once again to Shannon Camp for providing the opening narration of this episode. Check out Little Women, a modern audio
drama.
It's out there. You can find it on Spotify. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, wherever.
Why would you want to, though?
I know. But if you like the show, tell your friends about it. We like to know that people are listening. And you can find us on Twitter at Del Toro Time. So, you know, check us out there. I don't post much except when the episodes come out. So, but if you have a question or anything, you can write to that Twitter account and comment on the episode, I guess, if you want to. Willow, you have anything else?
No.
Well, then I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when...
It's Del Toro time. Bye, you nerds.
Drama.